got 10 guys on the field.
Third down and 7. This one is launched for McLaurin. He's got it. Touchdown. Touchdown, Terry McLaurin.
Oh, what a firework that was, baby. What an explosion late on a Monday night, week 3. That, not on the 4th of July, but on the eve of 4th of July. That firework from Jaden Daniels under a heavy blitz and a big pop just as he released it. A majestic arcing pass to the back corner of the end zone. Terry just outstretched over, who's their top corner? The one that talked a lot of trash. I forgot the guy's name. Oh, what a throw. To me, I know I keep coming back to this. That throw, that play, that win, that moment, even though it was not on the final play of the game, was so significant, was so unbelievable. And they had a, I think it was a 3-point lead, if I'm not mistaken. I have to double check that. I'm pretty sure it was a 3-point lead when that throw was made.
4-point
lead. There you go. Thank you, AMAC. So, I mean, it's not like that won them the game, but that iced the game. Because what would happen, right, McLaurin's 27-yard touchdown pass puts them up, along with the extra point, 38-26. So it puts them up by 12. But Cincinnati scores in the final minute of the game. Now, again, maybe they wouldn't have scored if the game was really on the line. I don't know. But the final score was 38-33. That did not win them the game. That iced them the game. But to me, that was such a significant win because Cincinnati was 0-2, desperate. At home, Monday night, it was a coming out party. I can't put that particular play for a bigger firework, a bigger explosion than Zach Ertz to get them in the playoffs. But I can put it, in my mind, as feeble as it is, I can put it over the Hail Mary. And I don't think I'm wrong by that. AMAC, as a disgruntled Giants fan,
I love it.
Who lives in D.C., would you say that I'm crazy?
I don't even live in D.C., so.
Whatever.
Yeah.
You work in D.C.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say that I'm crazy for suggesting that the Monday night McLaurin pass that we just heard, Monday Night Magic,
mm-hmm.
would you say that that was a bigger and more significant play than the Hail Mary?
No, I think I agree with Little, though. I think that was Little who was talking about this game being like the coming out party for the Commanders. I think the Cincinnati Commanders game, because I remember going into that game, I'm like, the Bengals are struggling, which they have historically done. But week 3, week 4, that's when they turn a page and kind of like kicked it up a gear. And offensively, they did that.
Right.
But I think the surprising thing was the Commanders just held in with them, even though the Bengals offense looked explosive, like they usually do. All that being said, I was here for the Hail Mary pass against Chicago. I remember Linnell and Toby flipping out for that, hopping on Twitter, seeing that. And then even being a Giants fan.
The best was Linnell's facial reactions at the end of some of these games.
Yeah.
Because he'd be like,
yeah.
You know, and he he's seen a ghost.
Yeah. And it's so funny because he flips so quick.
Yeah.
So, like, before that, I mean, the Commanders.
Well, it's shocking that Linnell would flip his opinion.
Not flip his opinion, but the Commanders just didn't look as explosive as they did before in previous weeks. And that game, they just looked stale and dry, and it was hard to get any momentum, even after starting the game up 12. And even after they were up 12, it was just like, put this team away. Like, what are we doing? So having him kind of like be down before that in a position where everyone's just ready to pack it up and go home, and then have that play happen, and then him and Toby just screaming to the top of it. It's nothing like, and this is only sports, I feel like, does this consistently, grown men screeching. just screeching, yelling, and flipping out like children. And so, yeah, I think that that's definitely – it's hard for me. Maybe Ovechkin's the 895, maybe that.
I'll give you something here. You know, obviously being at the Hail Mary, being at not in Cincinnati for the McLaurin one, being at the Hail Mary, being at the Ertz overtime, being at Ovechkin 893, 894, 895, I think even 892, if memory serves me, or maybe it was 891. All of that, like, as a professional, I have to, like, maintain composure and whatever. But if when I'm watching a game on television, so, like, several times I didn't go on the road with the Commanders, i.e. at Cincinnati, at Arizona, did not make those road trips. I did not make the road trip to the Dallas game regular season finale. I didn't even go to Tampa for the opener of the playoffs because some things were going on and whatever. I did go to Detroit and Philadelphia. When I'm watching these games at home, I have, and this might not surprise anybody, but I have a somewhat muted reaction. Like, I don't go bananas. I don't go nuts. I don't start pumping my fist or going crazy or doing Linnell Willingham dances. But of course I'm excited. I'm happy. I'm pumped up. I'm, you know, like, way to go, Terry. You know, oh my God. Oh, whoa. Like that kind of thing. And I'll always clap, right? Now, I won't throw anything at the TV, good or bad. I won't jump around and act like some of the videos that you see, not just for Commander stuff, but in moments of pure joy. I won't do that anymore. Maybe a younger me would have done that. But I'm very happy. But I'm happy. See, people think I hate this fan base. I don't. I'm happy for the fans. I'm happy for the good players, for the good people. And I'm happy for the radio show, for God's sakes, which I'm allowed to be. Like, if that makes me selfish, I don't know what to tell you. But I'm happy for a lot of people, much more than just me. Because I'm unimportant in the grand scheme of things. The show is more important than my emotions. Sometimes they're one and the same. And they're intertwined. But when it can be happier, less stressful, less angry, that's what I'm about. But I'm not going to jump around and smash things or do cartwheels or handstands. That's not what I'm doing. That's not what I'm doing. But yet these moments are so exciting. Like, I could remember for Ovechkin, whether it be 894 or specifically 895, like, my main thing is, okay, Chris, you've got to get the video. And I was literally almost every shift that Ovechkin skated on that Sunday on Long Island, I was recording via video just him. I didn't care about the game. The game was completely useless. It was about Ovechkin. So there is a part of me that has to mute my celebratory kind of outburst because I've got a job to do, right? But it's all part of what makes sports sports, is like the coming out, if you will. I think AMAC basically said, you know, allowing yourself to just let it all go. And sports does bring that out a lot. Now, it brings out a lot of frustration and a lot of anger sometimes. It does, especially when you mix in alcohol. But a lot of the times, it's that. All right, one thing I wanted to get to before I forget. So, I think we mentioned this earlier in the show. Maybe it was on the TV hit that I did with DC News Now and Derek Forrest, which you can hear at 11 o'clock or see and hear tonight at 11 o'clock on DC News Now. But Jacob Young's catch last night in the ninth inning. For anybody that wasn't still watching the game, and I was actually paying attention. I was doing some work. I got some Commanders writing for Command Post, a Rick Snyder production. And I was writing about Laremy Tunsil and the offensive line and so on and so forth. And the score was one-sided. It was like, I forget what it was. It was, can't remember exactly what it was. I'm trying to look quickly here. I guess it was 9-4 at the time. So it was a 5-run lead. And Kyle Finnegan's on the mound, and I'm like, this is kind of weird. And yet, Kyle Finnegan was there. He hadn't pitched since Sunday in the 3-inning win out in Anaheim. And it's a 9-4 game, and I'm like wondering, okay, why is Kyle Finnegan out there, number one, and why am I still watching this? And, you know, sometimes when you least expect it, you get the best, not the best of my love from the Eagles, but you get the best in return. Jacob Young doing what he did to climb the wall and to snatch a home run. I don't want to say it was the most amazing play I've ever seen. That's not fair. And it was in a 5-run game. So I want to be clear that the game was not in the balance. But my goodness, to make the play that he made, and I want to hear it because I was watching it, and I don't think anybody thought Jacob Young was making that catch.
3-2 the count. Here it comes. Fastball driven in the air to deep center field. Back goes Jacob Young to the wall. He climbs the wall, and he caught it. Oh, my goodness. He robbed him of a home run. Do you believe it? Jacob Young with a spectacular catch. Climbed the wall and robbed Green of a home run.
He did climb the wall. Dave Jagler on the call, 106.7 The Fan. Interesting. I don't know if I've ever thought about this, but Jags, and that's not a normal part of his call, but do you believe it, right? Charlie always says, Charlie's thing is can you believe it? I'm trying to remember. Anyway, it sounded better in my mind. But what a great play by Jacob Young. Now, earlier in the game, he had thrown out a runner at home. And Jacob Young, JY, has been hitting. He's been running. He's been a factor. Sure, Natty Lowe got the 3-run triple, which busted it open. But Jacob Young had an RBI ground out to make it 9-4. Threw out a runner at home. Had an unbelievable play. That's why the Nationals have suddenly kind of come around a little bit. They're still not a good enough team. But they've gotten contributions from guys that they weren't necessarily getting contributions from. And number one on that list, in my opinion, is Jacob Young. Paul DeJong back. He had an RBI single last night. If you look, C.J. Abrams is obviously in a pretty good stretch. Nathaniel Lowe struggled there for a while and now has come back around. Guys that weren't hitting are now hitting. Not everybody. But look at the catcher situation. They got a big hit from Millis Sunday in Anaheim. The last couple of games, both in Anaheim and here, Riley Adams has been more like last year's Riley Adams. So they've done a good job for the most part. Now the Nationals take on the Tigers tonight, 6:45. The only thing that came out of last night that you really didn't like, well, two things. One, look, the bullpen is still very, 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 very shaky. Jose A. Ferrer, you know, cannot be trusted in any kind of big spot. It just can't be. He just can't be. That's all there is to it. Just can't be. There's sometimes where he's great. But to ask him in a big spot with the game on the line, and it doesn't have to be in the ninth inning, Jose Ferrer just not, right now, not good enough. I don't know if he ever will be. Probably not, but right now, not good enough. But here's the one issue that kind of gets lost. What is Davey Martinez thinking starting Mackenzie Gore in the sixth inning with 98 pitches? Granted, yes, it's a doubleheader. But he had a rested A bullpen, as my guys from Talk Nats pointed out, rested A bullpen, including for Finnegan, including Ferrer, including Brad Lourd, including Cole Henry, right? He had a rested bullpen. Those guys, because of the blowout on yesterday afternoon in game one of the doubleheader, they didn't pitch. So he had Lourd, Ferrer, Henry, Finnegan, and he starts the sixth inning, Gore, with 98 pitches. And he already had four walks. I don't know what Davey was thinking. I really don't. I was confused, befuddled by that. I know he's trying to, you know, get more than five innings out of his starter. I got it. I do. But when a guy is cruising, that's when you do that. Not when a guy is laboring, struggling. Now, one of those walks, I should point out, was before Mackenzie Gore got pulled in the sixth. So he had three walks going into that frame. So just again for whatever that means, but 98 pitches, whew, three walks. Couple of runs, one run at that point. Second run came in. That was, to me, that was an interesting and weird decision, to say the least, from Davey Martinez. All right, we're always live and free on the Odyssey app. We continue along till 4 o'clock. Got to get into a new report that has emerged about LeBron James. Maybe we'll continue to hear some firework explosions via DC Sports Athletes over the next 40 minutes or so, right here on the Team 980, always live and free on the Odyssey app.
Kevin James. With the left hand, and he makes the steal.
Goodness,
you know who apparently isn't best friends? I say apparently. Not me and AMAC. We are. We love each other. Apparently, LeBron James and Luka Doncic are not. Oh, wait a second here. What is he talking about? Well, according to John Gambadoro of Arizona Sports 98.7 FM, LeBron James and Austin Reeves, who just recently opted out of his contract, if I remember correctly, don't like playing with Luka Doncic. Gambadoro last night reported that the Lakers want to move on from James, and that supposedly James wants to move on from the Lakers. Gambadoro added to that and said, I don't know if they trade him, never said one way or the other. Just mentioned what I was told, plain and simple. And those who know me understand this information only comes from really good sources. LeBron and Reeves don't like playing with him. That's Austin Reeves. And LA would love to move on from LeBron if they can. No idea if he gets traded or bought out, but time will tell.
But going back to this is going back to your conversation yesterday, Rooster, because I think this illustrates a perfect point of LeBron playing GM and it coming back to not back only backfire on him, but backfire on the organization.
So what you're saying, if I heard correctly,
I'm not going to go as far.
What you're saying is, Rooster, you are
no.
That's what you're saying.
No, LeBron does go too far in playing GM, and it does hurt franchises. Him and Rich Paul, I do not believe, run the league. Like, there are a couple of callers who came in and said that, like, as an organization, you can also say no. Like, we're not going to allow that to happen. So you have two people playing a dance that ultimately leads to LeBron James having some type of leverage and power. But that doesn't mean he runs the league. He's just a superstar player who has a little bit of juice. And he's not the only player who's done this. Like, we've seen multiple stars in a lot of sports, large sports, where they have pull, they have juice. And if you're a GM, it makes sense for you to consult your star players before making large decisions.
I don't disagree at all with that.
But
consulting is different than basically getting down on your knees and saying, you know, thank you, sir, may I have another.
Basically getting down on your knees. I got you.
I mean, that's what the Lakers did last offseason. To cater to give in to all of LeBron James' whims. And now they want to get rid of him? And now, supposedly, LeBron, oh, what would Stephen A. Smith be doing right now if he actually wasn't on vacation? Because they take a couple of weeks off in July, because of Wimbledon, B, because, you know, it's reasonably speaking the only time that people can take off in these sports that are 11 and a half months out of the year. And even now, I mean, the NBA is still going. But, I mean, you know, just at some point they take off because you got the NFL in August. But the point being is, you can consult. You can have input. You can have an open-door policy. What you can't do is what the Lakers did last summer. Because if there's one shred of truth to the fact that they now want to get rid of LeBron, and LeBron wants to get rid of them, and LeBron and Austin Reeves don't like playing with Luka Doncic, again, you took a telephone pole up the keister last summer to give in to every woman desire of Rich Paul and LeBron James. And a year later, LaDaddy supposedly wants out. And might leave his son to play for the Lakers? Or might he try and engineer a trade there? Because the Lakers really didn't want LeBronny. They just did LeBronny because they had to. Wow. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. On the Team 980 and the Odyssey app, we continue along. And we will give you a trending alert right here, right now, for the final time, not only today, but the final time this week. And we've got some breaking news, something I didn't think we would be talking about today, but we'll talk about it and we'll lead the trending alert right here, right now, on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app. And we're always now on iHeartRadio and the TuneIn apps. All right, how about this? Famed Mexican boxer Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. has been arrested, according to multiple reports, for entering the United States illegally and will be deported to Mexico, where he faces organized crime charges, according to federal officials. It comes just a few days after the former champ fought in a match last Saturday in Anaheim against Jake Paul. That was, again, Jake Paul. The Department of Homeland Security and ICE, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement officers, detained Chavez for overstaying a tourist visa that expired in February of 2024 after he entered the United States in August of 2023. And they called him an egregious public safety threat. Okay, so there you have that. Meanwhile, from baseball, just a tough story to deal with. One day after the Detroit News detailed the financial improprieties and troubles of Malik Beasley of the Detroit Pistons, the next day we find out Cleveland Guardians starter and pitcher tonight, or was scheduled tonight, Luis Ortiz, is under investigation by Major League Baseball after a betting integrity firm noticed a pair of pitches that had received unusual gambling activity, according to ESPN. The firm IC360 sent an alert in June to sportsbook operators, and Major League Baseball has put Ortiz on non-disciplinary, however paid, leave through July 17th while they continue to investigate. And that's what's trending.
Unleashing the quarterback.
Half a minute, no timeouts. Daniels throws down the sideline for Terry McLaurin. McLaurin is loose. Lightning strikes twice in Washington.
Oh, that was such a big play at the time. 86 yards. Terry McLaurin from Jaden Daniels. Ultimately, the rest of the game would be a complete show, as the Commanders would give up like 14 kick returns for touchdowns, part of a special team slop fest, which really was the case for much of the year. In some ways, I mean, in some ways special teams was good, some ways it was bad. I guess I shouldn't expect it to be perfect, but it was far too many problems for me. But my goodness, that play set off some fireworks. And I think right before that on Infinity Sports Radio, I said to Pat Boyle, who is the host, I said, you know, Jaden Daniels kind of been in this position before. Does he have magic again? And then he made that play, I think right as we were on the air, live nationally. It's crazy. Just nuts. There were so many moments like that last year, obviously. Now, that play again set off huge fireworks at the stadium that day, but ultimately because of the way they lost and because the game largely meant not a whole lot of anything. Dallas wasn't any good at the time. Again, you can't put that game as the number one explosive firework grand finale play. As Athens said, it's Alex Ovechkin. Even more than the Hail Mary, even more than Zach Ertz, even more than Terry in the playoffs, even more than the Zane Gonzalez stoink to win the Tampa Bay playoff game, the Quan Martin pick six, the McLaurin Monday nighter, McLaurin from Marcus Mariota at the end of the Dallas game, week 18, all great plays. But the most explosive, the most celebratory, the most grand finale, the most momenty, if you will, has to be Alex Ovechkin. Has to be. Nothing even comes close because of the career longevity and the career greatness and significance. No offense to Jaden Daniels and anything the Commanders did this year, but he can't possibly outweigh what Ovechkin did. Not only on that Sunday afternoon on Long Island at UBS Arena and two nights before at Capital One, which was a celebration in and of itself, but because of the career longevity and the greatness, you can't put any one individual moment or series of moments from a terrific turnaround year by the Commanders ahead of Alex Ovechkin. You can't. All right, so do we believe this John Gambadoro 98.7 in Arizona report, A, that LeBron James is sick and tired of the Lakers and wants out, and that they're tired of him and they want him out, and on top of that, adding to it, that Austin Reeves and LeBron James apparently don't want to play with Luka Doncic? That might even be more explosive than the first part. Now, Gambadora, I don't know him personally, but I know this. He has been one of the guys. I don't know how right or wrong he's been. I haven't tracked it. But every once in a while, you see his name pop up, and he's got a big report. And he's got a big inside scoop. Again, I have no idea what his track record actually is. Don't know how successful he has been. But clearly, somebody has kept him employed. And people listen. Now, I don't know, as a Phoenix radio host, how John Gambadoro gets as many breaking news stories, and it doesn't seem to be all Arizona. And clearly this is not. But, according to his bio, he's hosted for almost 30 years an afternoon drive in Arizona. Now, that does not make you qualified to break every story. But, look, I know this. If your track record is 1-10, your program director is going to be like, yeah, this is really bad. You got to clear it. You got to prove it. You've got to show me what is going on here. I've got to have proof. I can't have the station look really bad. It's not just you, man. The station looks really bad. So I would assume somebody's got to be greenlighting this stuff. I could be wrong, but somebody's got to be greenlighting. Apparently, Luka Doncic and LeBron James and Austin Reeves, or LeBron James and Austin Reeves don't want to play with Luka. I have no idea how Luka feels, but apparently that's the case. And apparently both sides are sick of each other. So you know how Brian Windhorst yesterday cracked the door open after locking the key and whatever he said over the weekend? I have not heard this anywhere else. AMAC, have you?
That those two don't like playing together.
With Luka, and that the Lakers are tired of LeBron and LeBron is tired of the Lakers. Not LeBron wants to win a championship and he's monitoring the situation and he understands their want to rebuild but also compete.
No, I haven't.
Which
heard
sounded
it.
Normal.
No,
by the
I haven't
way.
Heard it. I okay. mean, it doesn't throw me for a loop though. I'm not like surprised. I don't know. We don't know if it's true. Obviously, but
correct.
I wouldn't be surprised if it is.
Yeah. I mean, I would not be surprised at all knowing how fickle LeBron James is, but also knowing that Rich Paul and LeBron James run the NBA.
It always comes back to Rich Paul and LeBron with you.
I mean,
it's a little obsession.
They just did the King of the Ring at WWE and the Queen of the Ring. I mean, they should put a king and a queen crown on LeBron James and Rich Paul.
Hmm.
I mean, they already called him King James, so I mean, I guess Rich Paul would be the queen. I don't know. But you get my point is, what a freaking disaster if you're the Lakers. What a disaster if you're the Los Angeles Lakers. You literally got ambushed in every way last year. You allowed yourself to get ambushed. And now a year later, supposedly, allegedly, you hate him and you can't wait to get rid of him and you hope he leaves. After you hit it. What everybody thought was a grand slam, which I wasn't so sure of. I was like, I wouldn't have made that trade if I was the Mavericks, but I wasn't convinced it was an absolute slam dunk, home run, grand slam, whatever. Like everyone else was, and that Nico Harrison was a village idiot. I didn't have that strong of an opinion. Although it was, a surprising trade, but that was apparently your big move. To put he and LeBron together. Unless, by doing that, that triggered more animosity on LeBron. That made LeBron dig in a little bit more. That made the Lakers say, yeah, you know what? We're done. We're going to take back control. Maybe that's what... kind of what happened here. I don't know. But my goodness, think about that. If you are the Los Angeles Lakers and you, again, got a telephone pole whacked upside your head last summer by Rich Paul and LeBron James, in every way, from hiring J.J. Redick to drafting LeBronny James to bringing back LeBron to doing whatever else they did. Think about that. And now, a year later, you want the guy gone at all costs? If that report is true. If that report is true. And maybe if it's even remotely true, maybe that makes LeBron James very tradable. Somebody from Hoops Hype last night, Sam Amico, I think it was, suggested that LeBron James finish his career like Michael Jordan did. You laugh. What am I talking about there, AMAC?
In Washington.
Mm.
Yeah, no. I mean,
would you like to see that?
No, not really.
I would, just for my own poops and giggles, mm-hmm. I would love to see LeBron and LeBronny here.
It sounds like it could be a circus show. A rebuilding team with a guy who's definitely at the very least puts his nose in almost everything the organization does. I think it could possibly set back the Wizards when we talk about rebuilding and developing. Yeah, but just for going back to the main topic, I think for the Lakers, like, we could see this coming. Like, they have been pushing off a rebuild for a while now, and I think that even that the finals win for them, mm-hmm. like, I don't think that team was ready to make a push like that. I think kind of the COVID bubble helped them out.
Yeah.
They caught fire at the right time, but yeah, I think that they've been kind of holding off a rebuild, but LeBron was always in the mindset of pushing this team to compete, and they just weren't like that. You can't just keep making free agency move after free agency move after free agency move and think retooling is going to get you right back into some championship contender form. Doesn't work like that, and we're seeing that repeatedly now in the NBA.
By the time we return on Monday, yes or no, is LeBron James still a Laker?
I don't know, man. I think the NBA is just so unpredictable.
I say yes, he is, but I say the band is really about to pick up. I mean, the noise is really, and this might save us. Like, I don't love talking about LeBron every day, but it's juicy. I can't deny it. It's juicy. Coming up, Dumb Dumb of the Day. We wrap up the show, we wrap up the week, and bring you into the 4th of July. And Craig Hoffman, next. All right, we wrap things up like this. We're going to give a multi-Dumb Dumb of the Day to Clemson University and their former women's gymnastics coach, Amy Smith. That's right. They had to fire poor old Amy in April following allegations of verbal and mental abuse. They cited sections of the responsible treatment of athletes and their demonstrating concern for their welfare in the termination letter. All of it was a process, right, in which they had an anonymous tip line. There was a significant uptick in tips to the hotline regarding the program's culture and environment. Their senior athletic director, or senior associate, I should say, athletic director, said there was the bump in messages over a period of time, citing emotional and mental abuse within the gymnastics team. Called for a deeper dive, according to a newspaper report. Then there was a survey in January, and then one-on-one meetings with 15 of 20 gymnasts. Then a mid-year review in mid-February with the coach. And then parents were brought in for a March discussion. Furthermore, Clemson then met with the coach on April 6th regarding team culture and environment and roster management plans. Then the organization or the university engaged legal counsel, and then they fired her after a final meeting on April 11th. Certainly seems like they had enough information and did enough of a process. The problem is they hired her in April of 2022, despite concern from two previous stints at Utah State and at North Carolina. She had already been alleged that she had body shamed one former assistant coach, calling her fat. And 10 different Utah State gymnasts left her program in 2019. The school says they did an extensive amount of research before hiring her. I think they should do a little bit more research perhaps next time. Yeah, sorry. Apologize, but Clemson and the now former gymnastics coach at Amy Smith, they both deserve a little whack upside the head. Got to be smarter. Got to be better than that. All right, that's going to do it for us. Have a great 4th of July. Craig Hoffman is up next. AMAC, enjoy your 3-day weekend, buddy. I'll be working hard. I will. Just not here. Be doing a wrestling podcast tomorrow morning. Rooster and the Rookie. And also writing for Command Post Magazine. So I got to work. Be safe out there. Don't do anything stupid. Don't blow your hands off with an M80. Happy 4th of July. And we'll see you back here on Monday at 1 o'clock. Adios.
Thank you. Yeah, you can go sit down, Rooster. Goodbye.